Parallel Lives is your source for atypical analog role-playing. This episode is 45 minutes long.
Jump in and let's talk about making Neon Genesis Evangelion into a tabletop role-playing game, or making a tabletop role-playing game set in the world of Evangelion.
Yeah, I basically have a plan for this, so I think that it makes sense for us to sort of talk about the difficulties with it and talk about why there haven't been good plans for it, and then I will be very happy to be like, here's why my plan is great!
That sounds like a plan.
Great!
So, we should probably talk about why this is the thing we want to talk about.
Yeah.
That probably starts by talking about Neon Genesis Evangelion, seminal work of Japanese science fiction anime.
Japanimation.
Seminal?
A poor choice of words.
I mean, it's pretty seminal in its way, actually. But, you know, when we say seminal, we mean relating to semen and not...
Carrie, that is so fucked up.
For those of you... listening at home.
Are we recording a podcast right now?
Yeah, we're recording a podcast right now.
Did we start? Okay.
No, we started when he was like, let's jump in.
Oh,
so
fair
we
enough.
Jumped in. So here we all are smashed together in a robot. And let's record a podcast.
Okay.
I've been.
That doesn't happen to Parallel Lives 2.0 plus 1.0
you
plus
can not
half
record.
Plus one quarter plus.
I was trying to make that joke.
So instead of just like doing some stupid fan waking about NGE, let's actually talk about it for like 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. Welcome to our fan cast of Jet Alone. Sorry. No. We can actually talk about it.
Wednesday. I told you. No wanking.
I'm sorry. Okay, that's so related to how to make a tabletop role-playing game about this universe.
It's, first of all, give up the Avas, just build Jet Alones.
Neon Genesis Evangelion, for those of you who do not know, is...
it's a seminal work of Jet Jaguar fanfiction.
...is a anime about giant robots.
Look, it's really fucking famous, alright? Yep. Just Google it.
Yeah,
but
I think...
there's some things that are important and unique about it that make it unusually hard to transform into a tabletop role-playing game. Namely, the relationships between characters are all very interwoven and very complex, and also... unlike a lot of giant robot anime, Neon Genesis Evangelion treats everything that's happening, first of all, like it's a war, and second of all, like it is a tremendously traumatic and hideously bad idea to make 14-year-olds pilot giant robots against monsters that nobody understands.
Taking off more broadly on that point, I think it's probably fair to say that Evangelion doesn't rest comfortably in any obvious or recognized genre of anime
it gets called mecha most often, but it's a really peculiar example.
It's a deconstruction of the mecha anime type. Somebody showed me an American advertisement put out at the time of Ava's release in the United States that was just everything you know about giant robots is wrong! Which is, like...
on the one hand... true.
On the other hand, God, what a bad tagline for a very good show. So, why do we want there to be an NGE role-playing game?
Well,
because we like NGE.
I think
we can just start calling it Ava.
I think Ava is probably a better short name.
No one cares about its weird, like, all Japanese series must contain three words and they must be kind of silly sounding together thing.
Ava was a series that didn't feel particularly bothered with fully explaining itself to the viewer. It was written in such a way that there was a lot of mystery, unexplained plot elements, all the standard stuff that you throw into a television show when you are willfully intending it to be some kind of cult classic, where you're a creator with an idea to bait your fans into becoming obsessed with the thing you're creating. And so, because of this, it's a natural piece of media to want to set further work in the world of.
There's enough unexplored space in just the plot of the central and original show that it feels like there are probably a lot of other worthwhile stories to tell hiding there in the margins that we don't get to see because we're focusing on the particular crop of pilots that we're focusing on.
We should probably say from the outset that this is going to be a podcast with a lot of Ava spoilers, probably.
Oh yeah, wait, I should get those spoilers collections at a storage.
Yeah, so just to get that out of the way, because what I'm about to say is a big old spoiler for Ava. One of the things that really interests me about having an Ava tabletop RPG is that all of the children who are pilots have lost their mothers and have a relationship to their giant robot that is, oh, this giant robot is, like, literally and figuratively my mom. And that's just super interesting and weird, and seems like a really fun thing to play around with.
See, that's really interesting to me for a totally different reason, which is that the premise of the story has a whole set of characters who appear only by name or briefly, who were deeply, deeply related to the plot 14 years ago. There's an entire generation of characters who happen in the background, where there's a whole world of intrigue and sort of thriller style goings on
that is happening behind the giant robot fights, and in fact long before them.
Further, since the series was concluded by a theatrical movie, End of Evangelion, the Evangelion universe has always had baked into it a pretty high degree of uncertainty about what the canonical version of events occurring in the story was. The theatrical movie End of Evangelion seems to run as an alternate or maybe complementary ending to the television ending, and this uncertainty about the actual events of the show has only been amplified by the recent release of a whole series of theatrical remake movies, which go all kinds of different places. And I'd say jump the shark somewhere in the middle of the second movie.
It's not super duper important to talking about a tabletop role-playing game of Ava, but there's also another weird layer, which is what's the relationship between the director and creator and the fans themselves. So Ava is actually maybe one of the hardest texts to read that I have ever encountered. And that means that there's a lot of depth there and a lot of creativity and a lot of room for interpretation and room for argument and room for adaptation. And something that has that much, like, just space inside of it is totally rife for fan works.
Like a tabletop role-playing game.
Would you say that when we're talking about an adaptation of Evangelion for role-playing games, and there have been some attempts, and we can talk about those to one extent or another later, you were interested specifically in trying to create something that you and your friends could play that would somehow stay in the canon of the series?
I think there's a lot of different possible answers to that question. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, sort of if we feel like it.
Right.
Maybe on alternate Tuesdays. I don't know that I actually think creating a tabletop role-playing game in the world of Evangelion is a doable thing or a thing that can be done well. But what it is from here, I think a good lens with which we can examine some of the questions that underlie tabletop role-playing. Like, what are you doing when you attempt to create a new story in the style of or in the genre of another work?
So you mentioned that you are concerned that creating a viable quality Ava tabletop RPG adaptation may not be possible. Let's talk for a second about the difficulties in doing the task, because that's sort of the second part of why we're having this conversation. The first part being like, oh, we want this thing done. And the second part being like, oh, but it's hard to do. So what makes it hard?
Well, so let me start by saying that if I was a sensible person, we'd be having this conversation about Star Wars. Because Star Wars is a piece of media that probably everyone has seen. Most people are familiar with the sort of core canon of, and that has had three different publishers make officially licensed adaptations of it. And that everything that I've said positively about why it might make sense to create an Evangelion tabletop game could be also be said about Star Wars, and that would be probably even more true. That said, Evangelion is a text that anyone who is interested enough in playing a tabletop role-playing game about is very likely to have opinions about. This is also true of Star Wars. Games that attempt to build on, recreate, duplicate aspects of existing pieces of media inevitably run into problems where the play experience that's created differs from sort of the ideal version of the thing that's in the head of the fan.
And there's so much space around Ava, you feel that makes it difficult to sort of pinpoint a universal experience of Ava for people. Whereas with Star Wars, even though there have been many different adaptations, you can sort of walk up to somebody and be like, oh, are you a core trilogy guy? Great, then we'll do a core trilogy style game. Oh, are you an expanded universe gal? great, then we'll do sort of an expanded universe feeling type thing. Yeah. Whereas with NG, it's like, I mean, like, you can do some, like, minor things. Like, do you prefer the original ending of the series, or do you prefer End of Evangelion?
Hey, look, it took 10 years for the English language fan community to figure out what actually happened in the ending of...
Yeah, like, the comparison to Star Wars, I think, is really apt as well, because a giant difference between Eva and Star Wars is that with Star Wars, you can be like, okay... I accept the original films as canon, and that's my only canon. Okay, I accept the original films and the expanded universe as canon, and I grudgingly accept the prequel films, or blah blah blah. But with Eva, it's like, it's totally up in the air. Like, what is canon? I don't know. Like, there are two directly competing things for what's canon in the form of, like, the actual original ending of the series and End of Eva. And then, oh my god, there are the rebuilds too? What the fuck is canon?
Angelic days.
For me, everything leading up to a sonorous piano playing moment is canon. That's what canon means. that's false, but, like...
The only Evangelion canon is Pachelbel's canon.
So, it's hard to pinpoint an Eva experience that is general enough that you can feel like you will give any Eva fan sort of an experience that they will recognize as being the Eva experience. Is there anything else that makes it unusually hard?
There's an extent to which, when I look at an adaptation of Evangelion, it feels like there's almost two games in there. There's one game about the people, and then there's one game about giant robots.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly things that are related, of course, like there are people in the robots, but they're on such a different scale. Like, in Evangelion, when they are going to use the robots, it's a whole to-do. There has to be an explicit emergency of some kind. You can't just boot them up and go around. They have, like, 5 minutes of power if they're disconnected from their umbilical cords. I can't remember if that's the word they use for it. And, like, there are some role-playing games where you have mechs, but it's more of a thing, like, you own a mech, and sometimes you can be in a mech and walk around in a mech, whereas Evangelion feels a lot more complicated.
It's also totally preposterous, I think, given the nature of the combat in the show to just have, like, sort of, oh, okay, so there are two games in here. Awesome, great. I will take the rules for a social game, and I will take the rules for a combat game, and I will just put those together. Like, no, that's really, really dumb. There's so much, like, symbolic value and, like, psychological nonsense happening in the actual combat in Eva that using any kind of normal combat rule is, I think, flatly stupid.
Right. When you're trying to recreate something, no matter what you're doing, you're making your best guess about sort of what the point of the original work was. You're positing a version of the central idea, central thesis of the thing that you're trying to duplicate, and you're trying to build a new story around that. And that's hard to do in Evangelion, because Evangelion is, in some respects, an art piece where, like Kerry was saying, you've got layers of symbolism and commentary about the relationship between the viewer and the media and all kinds of other nonsense piled on top of a story that's already surprisingly mostly about the relationships between characters, not about big fighting robots. Like, if I wanted to make a Gundam Wing tabletop role-playing game, easy, that wouldn't peasy. Even be hard.
Yeah, easy peasy. Because Gundam Wing doesn't have any fucking combat encounters where part of the point of the combat is that the main character has slipped into solipsism and can't get out. Because, like, fucking roll grapple does not work against solipsism. Like, and that's why you can't just port over traditional combat rules.
Yeah, so, like, I could see a person sitting down and thinking to themselves that, for instance, in an older episode, unfortunately, one which only I was in out of all this group, we played Rookvale, which is based on the Anima Prime system. And Rookvale is a system wherein you have one scene that is like a combat scene kind of thing, with kind of loose, interesting dice pool-based combat. And then in between those scenes, you'll have scenes specifically for a purpose of, like, healing or, like, marking off certain traits for various mechanical reasons between specific characters, and so it has a pattern of social and then fight. And I could see a person sitting down and thinking, okay, well, we'll just try and port over these Anima Prime rules here, and that'll have the same kind of rhythm as Evangelion, except maybe you put in some more non-combat scenes because it's not fighting quite that often in Eva. But I don't know if that would actually work for these same reasons that we've been talking about here. And Charles and I have both been looking at a little bit of the character sheet for Adaptus Evangelion, which is, I believe, based on Dark Heresy.
And it's an Evangelion fan game based on Dark Heresy.
That's such a bad choice.
It's tellingly, like, here in, like, announcements for it.
I can't believe what a bad choice that is.
They're sort of, they're
like, D&D would be better.
I think what it is actually, here's sort of their tagline elevator pitch for it.
I'm sorry, Adaptus Evangelion people.
You make the child, you have the mental issues, you drive the robot, you fight the angels, you go crazy, you turn into Tang, maybe save the world, if you don't fuck it all up, which you probably will.
Yeah,
so what I see here is, what they wanted out of the Warhammeriness of Dark Heresy is probably just sanity mechanics.
Yeah, and I guess, like, that's a fine tag. Like, that's a fine tag. That seems, like, if you played that game delivered the experience that it says it will based on that tag, I think that's an Ava game. I just didn't care for Dark Heresy and think that, like, the totally personal relationship that happens in Ava is a gigantic, hilarious mismatch with the impersonal universe that is Warhammer 40K. Even down to something like Dark Heresy.
The Hedgehog's Dilemma.
Yeah, nobody gives any shits at all about the Hedgehog's Dilemma in Warhammer 40K. You get next to each other, you fucking space marines! Get next to each other! I don't care if you stab each other! We're at war!
Unfamiliar ceiling. That's all I remember about Evangelion.
The ceiling is covered in orcs. The ceiling is an orc.
Asuka does go faster, though.
And that's true. So, rather than make fun of people's, like, presumably fairly well thought out and well-intentioned games that I'm sure capture something of what they're looking for in a tabletop role-playing game experience, sort of loosely themed off of a two-sentence caricature of Evangelion, why don't we talk about whether you could use any of the games that we've played on this podcast as have an Evangelion 2.0 of them?
For me, the answer is no. The closest that you get is going to be, again, for me, Monster Hearts for various teenage reasons, which I can get to because I have a battle plan for this. But I think, in my experience, you're mostly going to have to use Monster Hearts as some inspiration and come up with some stuff whole cloth.
I think you could do it with Dogs in the Vineyard, actually.
Ooh!
Hmm.
Dogs in the Vineyard has a game system that's built for playing out fairly lengthy encounters that are not necessarily combat, but are still grounded in the rules.
And briefly, I want to jump in to clarify something really, really fast. When you say making an Ava game, I know we've talked about this in the past. Are you thinking about playing pilots or playing NERV right now?
We've sort of verged into a talking about playing pilots
category.
I think the answer is you could do this either way.
Cool.
I think one of the things that is actually good about Dogs in the Vineyard is that it has mechanical weight that can carry a variety of different kinds of stories.
That's fair.
Even if it does so imperfectly.
I confess that when you talk about playing NERV, I find myself drawn instantaneously. And I think this example is mostly joke by volume, but I kind of just want to do like a tycoon-style management game. Like, I want the plot of Ava from the perspective of NERV. Because
This is not a tabletop role-playing game. This is a, like, frankly, rather genius computer game in the vein of, like, Dungeon Keeper and Evil
Genius. No, you
just
want to play Dr. Akagi?
Yeah.
I want, like, this game.
Who's it that made The Sims again? I can't remember.
Maxis?
Oh, I thought there was, like, a person. One of those creators.
Good callback to Evil Genius, by the way. Again, I thought I might be the only person who remembers.
Evil Genius, remarkably underrated.
I agree. I played it in the last, like, 3 years.
I was just trying to make it.
I went back to it.
Peter Molyneux's In His Heaven, All Is Right With The World, but I don't think it's Peter Molyneux.
It's not, but...
The things we can take from Molyneux are an interest in management and god game sims.
Yeah.
And also a late blooming interest in human morality as played out in progressively more complex scenario, with the first Fable game being explicitly like the world is like black and white D&D morality and that's how things are, and the final game currently in the Fable trilogy being called basically like good and evil are really relative, and actually being a good and just ruler may endanger the entire fate of the world. Fable 3 is not a good game, but it is an interesting one.
Quick question, Wednesday.
Yep.
Do you think that you could do a NERV-specific Ava role-playing game, like Mars Colony?
Oh!
Do you think you could do Mars Colony? And I have to ask Wednesday this, because nobody else has played Mars Colony.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think you could do NERV Colony? Tokyo 2 Colony.
Well, Mars Colony is a game all about having too many problems and not enough solutions, which seems about correct.
Yeah?
It's been a little bit too long for me, since I played Mars Colony, for me to be able to reliably remember all of the mechanics, but I could see it.
What about Durance? What about Nerve Durance?
I think you could definitely do a Durance-based game about a group of people trapped working on a project together to do some kind of unfathomably dark and secret thing.
I think Cube.
What would the latter be, though? Would it be, what, Sele and Nerve? Or what?
You'd have, like, government and Nerve, yeah. And you'd yes. have to be a sort of espionage.
Finally, Jet Alone!
I'm not convinced that Durance would actually add all that much.
I don't know that it would.
Because what Durance actually has is the brilliance of the scenario generation and sort of the prompt elements. And in this case, we'd be writing our own version of that. But yeah, that basic structure, what that's giving us is a framework for what your cast of characters needs to be for a compelling story.
You could do a Nerve game using Kingdom, and this is another game that only I have played out of this group. I mean, unless Hugh's played
which one's
Kingdom is the one, it's a three-player game where each of you plays a character who kind of is both a character and symbolically important to how your kingdom runs.
So one of you would be Dr. Akagi, one would be Gendo, and would be some sort of government rep?
Kind of, maybe, yeah. So one person is the touchstone, and they're like how generally people are feeling. One person is the power, and one person is something else. Okay, I can't remember. I remember being pretty good, though.
Kilt?
The flump? No.
the pop?
That's our longest and stupidest inside joke.
God, why is that the one? It's not even good.
Nope. I thought it was good. So back to what I was saying about giving you a framework for a cast of characters necessary to make a story about power imbalances and secret agendas and betraying people to get things done. Mm. If that's all we're saying you're taking from Durance, then you could use Durance for it. But, I mean, to what extent are you playing Durance, or what do you just play a game where you have more characters than you have players, you have a requirement that you have your characters arranged in a hierarchy, that there be power imbalances between them, and that you play out a series of scenes, and that there be external stressors forcing them into action?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you could also, and we'll go back to podcast favorite game, I guess, dolls, and you could make your own custom dolls with custom doll scenarios. And so you have five basic events that would hit, and then from that, you reassemble it into some kind of, make your own Nerve story or whatever. And I'm not saying that's the perfect way to do it, but
sufficiently, high-impact events, I think that you're...
Yeah. What I'm saying is, Durance doesn't grab me as an Evangelion hack, but...
Hold on a second. Is the Shabalhiri Roach a viable Evangelion hack?
Wait a minute.
You've got devious professors.
Yeah.
You've got eldritch powers.
Uh-huh.
You've got a sequence of events.
Oh. The Shabalhiri
Adam. The commands, though? I guess the commands would just be something like, look, you need to get this project done. You need to get funding for this project, no matter what.
I'd want to replace the commands with just external events.
Mm.
Like government budget cuts.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or like, there's you've like lost big... the money for this. And
But what's so cool about the Shabalhiri Roach is that, generally speaking, turning to the side of the dissolute and evil comes with substantial mechanical advantages.
Mm.
And that doesn't sound duplicated by the version of the commands
you suggested. No, you could do it. You could switch to Sele.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You could switch to Sele from Nerve, and your agenda would therefore become different, and you would be pushing their agenda, and therefore potentially harming Nerve's agenda. And, you could lose Tokyo 2 in a way that Nerve would never want to lose Tokyo 2.
So I guess what you're saying is that in actual Eva, everyone else is hoping that they're playing a normal role-playing game. Meanwhile, oh no, I just forgot his name. Watermelon Farming Douchebag.
Oh yeah!
He's not a douchebag!
Yoji Kaji?
Ryoji Kaji.
Ryoji Kaji.
Yoji Kaji.
Yoji Kaji is playing the Shabal Yoji Roach.
That actually works, and the way that you make that work is that everybody's pursuing their own version of instrumentality. They want to, and that actually matches with
mm-hmm.
Shabalhiri Roach
the,
and Evangelion.
No, it's true.
You have a game about scientists and agency directors and the global Illuminati all trying to merge the souls of humankind together to achieve happiness and that particular one thing that they want.
Back to teens, what about Dread?
Oh,
you could definitely do it.
That's
you could do
fun.
Dread.
That's really fun.
Dread is story neutral, so you could just weave whatever kind of story you want in there. And
Yeah, so on the subject of teens, I think that the...
I like it because it means that every emotional conflict you had leading up to the robot battle makes the robot battle worse.
So that's...
I'm like, that part's right, but I feel like I might do a version of this that doesn't have Dredd's peculiar oddities. Like, once everything went bad enough, everything's fine for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't...
That's a little bit Ava, a little bit.
You'd have to hack it a little, I think. But
it'd be a pretty easy hack, yeah. So for me, one of the things that is essential about playing a game where you play the pilots... is that instead of there being two games, the emotional game and the combat game, there is only one game, trauma and emotional energy. And something like having a single resource like a Jenga tower does make it so that there is only one resource and that everything you do spends your one-ass resource. So I think that every good idea that I would have about how to make a pilot game would spring from the notion that there is only one resource in the game.
Going to insert for context here, in case you're jumping into the second season of this podcast and haven't listened to our back catalog, that Dredd is a game that's played with a Jenga tower, and anytime you do anything, the GM tells you to pull blocks from the Jenga tower, and if the Jenga tower falls over, you die.
Yep. And in an Ava hack, you might not die.
Best elevator pitch
lose
of any
fight.
Of our games.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
It's a really
Jenga
good
tower thing. Instead of dice roll. Like everyone I talk to gets it instantly, thinks it's super cool.
It's super cool.
I'm willing to contend that Dredd might actually be the best game we've covered in this podcast.
Oh, I think there's a pretty good chance.
I'm also willing to contend that Dredd is not exactly a game per se. It's just a really brilliant game mechanic. Like you don't need anything other than that. So this is how it works, and then build a scenario around it, and have the GM do a thing to make the scenario happen.
Is
there's
that
not
different
really
than
anything.
Other game systems?
Yes, okay. Because Dredd essentially doesn't have character sheets. It only has qualitative character sheets. It's not coupled. The characters and the mechanics are not coupled in any other way.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I can freeform a game about anything set anywhere with any characters with Dredd, assuming that it's a narrative that has
that
an appropriate level of tension built into it.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
And because of that, if I had to pick something to use that added something to the experience of playing it to build an Evangelion game on top of it, Dredd would be a great choice.
So, do you want to hear about my loose idea for a pilot game?
I do.
Go for it,
Gary.
There is one resource, and the one resource, rather than being a Jenga tower, is cards of some kind. Hugh hates this for good reasons, but my first choice for what kind of cards you would have would be tarot cards. Because tarot cards have flexible meanings, and many of them are unique.
Can they be a really Christian-themed deck of tarot cards?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that would be
better.
Any
deck of tarot cards. Like, it doesn't matter. It just needs to have as much, like, flexibility in meaning as tarot cards have.
At last, a use for my Homestuck tarot deck.
Yeah, of course. Homestuck is very related to Ava. They're like, yeah, there's a lineage there. But yeah, so, like, your character, say fucking Shinji Ikari. Shinji Ikari is a shitty character. He is not very good at anything, so he gets maybe 5 cards. And if things go badly for him, he loses cards. So he loses choice. Sort of like Depression Quest, I guess. Where it's like, okay, so I've encountered this problem, and I get to draw 3 cards about it, and choose the reaction that I like the best that is the most appropriate. But at a certain point, maybe I only have the same 3 cards, so I'm doing the same things over and over again. And obviously, you'd probably want to include some way to get new cards or to get cards back. You would probably want to lose cards randomly so that, like, there might be some good cards and you'd be like, haha, shoot, I just lost my best card. But you would use the same cards for combat as well as for social interactions. So they might have like combat value and social value. If you become more traumatized and lose your cards, you get less competent at fighting and less competent at having the like social interactions. And basically, like, many actions, many successes have a cost. And, you know, eventually perhaps you're trapped in a horrifying loop. That sounds like Ava to me.
I have an addition to this, which is that I think there's a thing hanging over all of these attempts to adapt Evangelion into a role-playing setting and a role-playing game that I don't think that we've talked about too much yet, which is that instrumentality, both the state and the goal, is actually a pretty major part of the plot at the end. And it would be interesting to try and come up with a system that can handle that moment of the game and to get into that level of abstract play around human psychology. And with that in mind, have we considered, and I don't think I'm joking, running gag though this is, I think that if instrumentality occurs in your Ava game, you just start playing Tower of Hats.
No, I mean, that's not unfair.
It is a game where you play yourself and yourself as you see yourself, and yourself as seen by the person to the left of you, and that is literally the last two episodes of that show, is Shinji playing Tower of Hats alone in a room.
So guys, I think we have the, like, episode description text for this episode. It's the in which we finally figure out a good use for Tower of Hats.
We should really play Tower of Hats.
We should probably play Tower of Hats at some point. But I like this Tower of Hacks you've made.
Anyways, and that's my version 2.22 for Tower
of Hats. Well, may I be the first to say, congratulations.
Congratulations, Charles.
Congratulations.
Man, we should put a warning at the front of this. Like, just don't listen to this if you haven't watched Ava, probably. Like, we're just going to say stuff and not explain it.
No, there was, like, a good, like, 12 minutes of, like, serious discussion about role-playing games in there.
Well, sure, but, like, I've also, you know, I've also just been saying, like, oh, somebody will play the Gendo, and it's like, if you don't know what Gendo is, like, well.
Yeah.
So, I was, at some point a little while ago, explaining why I thought Dogs in the Vineyard was a mechanically safe choice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's because I think you could actually run... It's something that's happening entirely inside a character's head. It's absolutely doable in Dogs in the Vineyard. Like, the healing conflicts in Dogs in the Vineyard are already metaphorical. You roll dice based on the symbolism and power of things and about the connection between characters. Like, Dogs in the Vineyard is already set up to have a framework where you can carry very abstract events on the back of the same set of dice rolls that you use for punching someone.
Now that I've explained it, please rate my Ava system. How'd I do, friends?
I like it pretty good, except that I feel like you weakened your focus when you gave cards social versus combat values. I think there is only one resource and only one value. That felt like a concession to trying to model two kinds of combat, and I think that one of the strongest things your version of the game has going for it is its decision to mostly eschew that attempt.
Yeah, really, what I meant is sort of, so a tarot card has, like, three different readings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them might be a more combat applicable reading, you know? But it could be something as simple as, and this is one of the ways that Monster Hearts is an inspiration for me when I'm thinking about this, is it could be something like Lash Out. Lash Out is something that absolutely has a combat value, and it absolutely has an emotional value. And, you know, you can just write the words lash out, and context will define what that's going to mean for you and your character. By the way, I think that this version of an Ava game would be a GM game, and basically you would imagine that, like, Nerve still exists, and that we're making Avas, but you would just clean out all the characters and probably make all new characters in their places. So, you know, you might have, like, you know, what if Dr. Akagi were Gendo? Okay, great.
In a tragic sub-impact, all of the previous crop were wiped out, and now, transfer students!
No. You would just, in worlds, you would just rewrite the canon. Like, none of that ever happened.
You'll never let me play a game where I'm the cool and interesting transfer student.
I mean, you want to do a new game of Monster Hearts?
Well, we can play Besom, Charles. It's fine. I probably like Besom.
Three levels in transfer student. I don't actually know whether Besom's a class level system. I think it's not. It like WAD based?
No, it's not WAD based. It's the same system almost exactly as Silver Age Sentinels, so it's point by.
I found out, by the way, that there is a Guardians of Order made Sailor Moon roleplaying.
What? Oh man!
And I thought, oh, that's Carrie's dream.
It's my dream. So
rate me, you.
I'm not convinced that that would be better than Dread.
That's fair.
I don't know that it adds anything other than the basic necessary fact of uncertainty and tension.
What it does add is the notion that your character could become so damaged that they, from a gameplay standpoint, they don't have as many choices anymore. So it really locks you into things.
Here's a hack. Play Dread, but each person gets their own Jenga tower.
I like it.
Okay, yeah. I was actually just about to say, like, well, what if Carrie's version was, like, a kind of deck-building game or something, except the decks go bad very quickly. But I think personal Jenga tower could also be quite the time there, as long as the towers don't fall on each other.
Everyone needs their own table, and they need to be vibrationally isolated from each other.
No, I certainly think the Dread notion...
Until instrumentality, at which point you wrap a string around each Jenga tower.
No, you just pick bricks at random and connect the individual blocks.
Is this a tabletop role-playing game or an art project?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, can I get a grant? Because I'll do this. You guys help, right? We just need to, like, tie strings between Jenga blocks.
Yeah, I mean, I can get some
8 hours.
Sure.
I mean, for some of that right. sweet grant money, I'll
I think I have a copy of Truth or Dare Jenga around.
I think we might be reaching a satiety on trying to do this task well. Does anyone want to try and do this task very badly? What would make the worst Ava game? I'll start. Brave Sparrow isn't good for this almost at all.
Oh, that just makes you mentally distressed all the time!
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I was 14 once, too.
Let's explain Brave Sparrow for our listeners, though, in case they haven't listened to all our episodes.
Oh, Brave Sparrow, brought to mind by the question, like, is this a tabletop role-playing game or an art project? Brave Sparrow is a game that straddles the line between role-playing game, LARP, and alternative lifestyle choice, whose central mechanics are strongly believe that at one point you had wings, and spend your days keeping an eye open for feathers with which to rebuild your wings.
And be brave and good
and
true.
And be brave and good and true. And that's how you play Brave Sparrow, approximately. There's more to it than
that. I love Brave Sparrow.
So I dispute that this is a bad choice, Charles, because there's definitely, like, life situations in high school that I got through simply by reciting I mustn't run away to myself.
Oh my god.
Like,
oh
my god. I, you know?
I refuse to laugh at that because that is too sincere, but
no,
on the other
like,
hand,
I'm not,
like,
I'm not laughing. I'm just, oh my god.
I'm laughing because I'm so charmed.
No, that's so real.
It's only, like, 50% true, but my point is actually that it's not...
Inhabiting a fictional headspace has definitely been a real coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In college, did you submit a Cruel Angels thesis?
No.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I think Brave Sparrow is mostly a bad idea, though it has its applications.
Yeah, certainly if it's a question of inhabiting a fictional headspace, this is not a list of fictional headspaces which one should voluntarily choose to inhabit.
Mm-mm.
I mean, honestly, I already went over this, and I don't want to be mean, but I do think that Dark Heresy is terrible. You know what's even worse, though? Cosmic Patrol. It's very bad.
Yeah, no, yeah. You could have a Cosmic Patrol crew, which is your nerve and pilots and...
Yeah, no, that's my favorite thing about Cosmic Patrol being a bad choice, is that you could try.
Yeah, it looks like it.
It's not like Ribbon Drive, where it's like, no, why would you put these things together?
Like, I was trying to think for the whole episode.
How do I make Ribbon Drive? Well, there is a tape cassette that is important in Ava. You're stuck listening to the same thing over and over again, and you always pause at the same point.
Yeah, but Cosmic Patrol would just be a... No, it would just be a clusterfuck.
It's,
it would just
it's
be,
the worst tonal mismatch.
It would be irrelevant.
That you would think, that, like, it's the worst tonal mismatch. That if you asked a stranger, like, hey, stranger, I want to put a giant robot anime together with this 1950s tabletop role-playing game. Does that make sense? I think the stranger would be like, yeah, sure.
Stop talking to me. We're at a bus stop is the first thing I'd say. But after you've explained yourself further...
You played a boy in a giant robot in our game
yes.
of Cosmic Patrol, so...
Yes.
Yeah, no, Razor Claw Lady of his.
Say no more.
Charles won't let me explain.
She's bound by dark laws.
Yep. Anyways, though, Aphex Twin, sex version, etc. I guess we're near the end,
okay,
though.
Okay,
yeah.
The sex version of Evangelion is not hard. It's related to the instrumentality... Anyway.
Yeah, no, as soon as you achieve instrument, like, that's the reward. Like, you're all trying to get to instrumentality, because once you get to instrumentality, you can have an orgy with everyone you've been playing with. So just play with people that you really, like, want to have an orgy with.
I definitely downloaded that off Kazaa back in the day. It's like 20 minutes long, too. Someone really, like, saw through their what if everyone in Ava had sex with each other for, like, emotionally scarring reasons thing. I wonder if I can still track that down.
Oh, you're being serious.
Oh, yeah, no, none of these things are jokes.
Oh, man, I definitely thought it was several jokes.
No. I thought it was a long joke, and then I realized...
You have seen this, right?
Actually, no.
God
what,
damn
what
it.
You're the one person I'm sure would have actually, like, downloaded this off Kazaa back in the day.
I mean, I all think right. I've read Evangelion fanfiction for, like, every meaningful pairing of characters. What if they had sex with each other for emotionally scarring reasons, but, like...
In instrumentality.
Yeah.
No, yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about.
It pretended it was an episode 27. It was about 21 minutes long. It was a fully animated hentai. Huh.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
Okay.
I think we know what the outro has to be for this, right? We should all sing Bonnie and
Rip. Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think of Calm Sister Todd.
No, that's what our listeners will be saying after we all sing Bonnie and Rip.
I believe it begins, fly me to the moon,
fly me to the moon,
and let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
And we're done. Are we?
In other words...
See you next week, folks.
And in other words, darling, kiss me. That part changes and I don't know which
one. Yeah, me too. Fill my heart with song.
It's also in Bayonetta, which is a place I've heard of more recently. Right?
But at some point, I'll fade this out and start playing the song.
Addendum to the Evangelion podcast. As soon as we stop recording, we had a really good idea.
The really good idea is the following. You could either set a game entirely in instrumentality, or even better, play a game that reaches the point of instrumentality, and when it reaches instrumentality, you switch systems basically to a penny for my thoughts. But this time, instead of everybody not quite knowing what their past is, like you don't know in Penny, you're sort of rewriting your history and rewriting your relationships, ideally probably to come up with something more harmonious. So basically, you know, it'll be something like, you were really mad at me. No, I wasn't really mad at you. You had just hurt my feelings. Oh, I see.
So the game is you just walk through the deep psychological reconciliation process that must occur between all human psyches.
Yep.
In the case of the player characters.
Yep. And I think this idea is super cool and is a possibly acceptable way to model instrumentality with the system. Weird.
That seems weirdly fitting.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our addendum.
That's our addendum. Yes. Instrumentality.
A penny for your instrumentality.
A penny for
an instrumentality for my thoughts?
Thank you for listening to Parallel Lives. If you want to find the show online, we're at parallelurl.com, parallelpodcast@gmail.com, or the Parallel Lives Tabletop Podcast on Facebook. Make your distant parental figure proud and review us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio. If you'd like to find any of us on Twitter, the podcast is at Parallel Chat, I am at Wednesday Quest, Hugh is at Ionic Blather, Carrie is at Baroque Emotions, and Charles is at Gush4U, with the number 4 and the letter U. This episode was produced by me. Check back next week for when we topple kings in Serpent's Tooth. That episode is an hour long.